Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. WynnBET is now live in all these states, and the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas has finally landed in online sports betting and casino play. From boosted parlays to live in-game odds on every major sport, WynnBET gives you the tools to win. Sign up today for your risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com to start winning.
Blue Wire.
It's exciting to win money.
Back out to Allen. His three-pointer. Bang! Tie game with 5 seconds.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Is there anything you don't gamble on?
Not really.
Gambling gods, fickle bunch.
Oh yeah,
so easily offended.
Gambling's not your problem. You're just an idiot.
And we welcome you into Full Slate of Blue Wire Gambling Podcast. My name is Greg Frank. You can find me on gambling Twitter at Undercover Greg. Follow the gambling podcast at @full_slate_pod. Also shoot me a follow at @G_Frank6 for the rest of my sports takes, movie takes, whatever's on my mind. Alex Uplinger, our jack of all trades, is at @Alex_Up7 and manages that podcast account as well. As it is the most wonderful time of year in the eyes of some, and it's certainly, I believe, Thursday and Friday as we record here on a Tuesday night. You probably listen perhaps on a Wednesday, but I believe that Thursday and Friday of this week are the best 2 weekdays in all of sports, with the wire-to-wire, wall-to-wall March Madness action that we'll have, with 16 games on Thursday and 16 games on Friday to complete the first round of the NCAA Men's Basketball Division I tournament. But without further ado, let's bring on our guest. He is Jared Smith, a betting analyst for Fox Sports Radio, for VSiN, and also for Live on the Line, as you can follow him on gambling Twitter at Jared Lee Smith. Jared, it's really good to have you on board. How are you doing?
It's Greg. Great to be here. I agree with your sentiment. This is, I would say, because of the volume of the games compared to, let's say, an NFL postseason week, which I would say is right up there. This might be my favorite week of the year because, again, you get 32 games the first 2 days, whereas the entire NFL postseason, I think, is somewhere right around there. So it's really a spectacle.
Well, we always like to allow the guests some time to brief us a little bit on his background. I noticed you are a Penn State alum, so I imagine you got to be pretty excited with the job Micah Shrewsbury has done this year. We'll see if they can keep him after the season, but
probably not.
But regardless,
but it's fun while it lasted right now, I guess.
Well, and hey, I mean, we'll get to the game against A&M, but certainly nice to see the Knicks doing something on the hardwood, right?
Yeah, and again, this is a program that's really I don't want to say struggled, because they've definitely had their moments, but I think the expectations, because of the conference they play in and the budget that the athletic department has, and just overall what a great football school it is, like, we're seeing it with a lot of these really good football schools, Alabama being the first one that comes to mind, just how much life is getting breathed into the basketball program. Penn State's never had that. And this year, I don't want to say it feels different, but maybe the coach is really the big difference. And maybe that's what sets them apart, I think, a little bit from some of the other programs in their conference.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, it's funny. I went to Temple, so I'll go back to, I'm sure, a game that you probably remember, the Juan Fernandez shot against the Taylor Battle.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. Well, I was talking to a friend yesterday. So I attended Penn State from 04 to 08. So I really didn't become a Penn State fan until I got involved with the school, like, early 2000s. Okay. So I wasn't around, really, for the Crispin brothers when they made their run to the Sweet 16. So in reality, as a Penn State, you know, during my tenure at Penn State, which is from 04 on, I've seen more Rose Bowls than I've seen NCAA tournament games.
Wow.
In 20 plus years. Three Rose Bowls, and only one, as you mentioned, the Rudy Fernandez game in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, yeah, that's crazy to think of it that way. And yeah, I mean, you guys are always a football school. Are you from the area, the PA area? I grew up in South Jersey.
I'm from all over. I was born in New York City and I lived there till I was five. And then my parents moved to South Florida. And then after that, there was another promotion that my mom got and we moved to DC. So I kind of grew up all over the Eastern Seaboard. But for the most part, I consider New York City my home base. I'm a Yankees fan. I'm a Jets fan, Rangers, Knicks. And then
Yankees Jets. I always thought it was Yankees Giants.
It is. Trivia, the trivia question there is why, and the reason is because the Giants used to play at Yankee Stadium and the Jets used to play at Shea, but obviously over time the barriers between those franchises have kind of eroded a little bit, and it just so happens that my family, which was a big Yankees family growing up, we had season tickets. My grandfather was really close friends with Gene Michael, the former scout, so I used to go to the spring training games in Fort Lauderdale a lot, and I was close with the team back in the early 90s. But my family also had Jets tickets growing up because Giants tickets were too expensive at the Meadowlands. So the Jets tickets were a little cheaper, so my family bought season tickets to the Jets. They weren't football, really a big football family, and I just grew up loving the Jets, you know, in the 90s when they made the run with Parcells, and that was a fun year.
Belichick was the coach twice, but never the coach?
Yeah. Yeah, that was 98, 99, like right in that time. And then after that, they had a couple of good years with Mark Sanchez, went to the AFC Championship game. So I had a good run in my early years. 94, I was 8 years old when the Rangers won the Cup, and the Knicks in the 90s were really good. But so early on in my sports life,
Yankees
I had
the
really good
around teams. That time.
Obviously, the Yankees every year were expectations high. But and then since then, it's been a downturn. But Penn State didn't come about until, you know, I was getting ready to go to college. And I was actually a Syracuse fan growing up because my cousin, who I was close with, went to Syracuse. Okay. So I was a big Syracuse fan during the 2000 times when Carmelo won the title three. And that was around the time that I was looking at colleges. And I went to a lot of journalism schools, Wisconsin, Northwestern was on the list, UNC. But when I walked on the Penn State's campus, I saw it for the first time when I went to Happy Valley. I absolutely fell in love. So
awesome.
I settled on Penn State and the rest is history, right?
Okay. Well, before we continue, when you say you're a Jets fan, I have to ask about what your personal feelings are with all the Aaron Rodgers drama.
That's a good question. I was actually thinking about it earlier today. So it's funny because you're catching me at a time where I used to have a daily show. And now I don't have a daily show anymore. Now I work a lot of weekends. So during the week, I have to keep my thoughts to myself for the most part, except for whatever I tweet out, which I try to be as buttoned up as possible these days, because you know how toxic Twitter can be. But
yeah.
Listen, I think the Aaron Rodgers stuff is about as toxic as you can ask for in terms of chemistry. I've never seen a situation like this where, let's be honest, this might be the first trade, major trade, like serious high leverage trade in NFL history, where neither team actually has any leverage. It's only the player involved that has all the leverage.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I actually wanted to look up, because I thought to myself, well, I know Rodgers is still under contract with the Packers.
Of course he is. He's only $50 million next year, and the Packers don't want to pay it, so they have no leverage.
And
but
so
the Jets have
up,
pushed all their chips in the middle because
trade.
They passed on all these other guys, so they have no leverage, and now they're signing players that they don't want, but Aaron does. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
It's bizarre, and I don't think it's going to end well, but it'll be fun. It'll be entertaining. It's New York.
No, it's funny because I thought to myself, well, does Rodgers have a no trade? And he doesn't, but I guess it's a de facto no trade because he can just retire if he doesn't like the setup.
Exactly. Neither team has any leverage in this trade, and I think both teams just want it to be over. They're willing to do whatever is necessary. Basically, it's desperation, frankly, to get this done and to move on. The Packers have felt like probably they've been held hostage by Aaron Rodgers for 3 or 4 years now.
Right.
And the Jets, Woody really – it's obvious to me that this is a Woody thing. And Woody really wants Aaron. And I think this goes above Joe Douglas's head. Granted, I don't know any of this for sure. This is just how I view the organization structure. Sure. I think this decision goes way over Joe Douglas's head. I don't think he has a whole lot of say in what's happening with Aaron Rodgers. And unfortunately – he's probably not loving the Lazard deal. He's probably not going to love signing Randall Cobb. But, I mean, this is what it is.
Awesome doing business.
Unfortunately, the Jets, because they put Rodgers in front of Carr and in front of everyone else, those other guys wanted jobs. And this is the time that they find jobs. Aaron is – he said he wasn't going to hold the Packers hostage. He is holding the Packers. I mean, this is – free agency has started. And he is still not under contract with the new team that he wants to play for in 2023. It is a bizarre situation. Neither team has leverage. I hope it ends soon, but I really have no – actually, no. It's going to end tomorrow because he's going to go on McAfee's show and tell everyone where he wants to go. But it reminds me of the decision, right? The LeBron decision. Jim Gray, like, it's just those who forget history are doomed to repeat it, and that's kind of what it feels like we're going towards here.
All right, well, let's transition a little more into how, you know, your background with the gambling space and kind of how you feel like it's evolved. I certainly feel like to an extent there's a lot of oversaturation. Everybody kind of thinks there's they are an expert, and I just, you know, one of the things that we bill ourselves up to be here is we're just a couple guys that like to watch sports and throw a few bucks down on the side for some, you know, additional interests. And, you know, however it goes, neither one of us, myself or Alex, are pretending to be people that are putting six-figure bets down or things like that. So that's kind of the vibe we set out here. And I do think that there's a lot of, you talk about the toxicity of Twitter, and there's a lot of, you know, gambling handicappers on there that just throw out plays and, you know, here's my 18 money line parlay on NFL Sunday with the big eight favorites on the board. So that's the big thing for me in terms of how it's changed. And I think it's for the worse, unfortunately, that we do have this oversaturation. But just tell me a little bit about your background, how you got into the space, and what you've seen in terms of trends the last 5 years.
Analysis of the space is pretty sound. I mean, I think there's, as an industry develops, which this is an industry, it was very much in the dark for a number of years. Now it's come to the light and it's still kind of forming its identity. And I think over time it will balance out just like any industry does. But right now it's also being escalated by the social media lifestyle that we live every day, which is people are on their phones constantly 24/7. They have addictive personalities. Gambling is addictive. It's an instant gratification society that we live in. People want to see results. They want to see big splashy things. They want to be entertained. They want to be wowed. And I think there's a lot of people taking advantage of that on social media by posting those parlays, by, you know, clout chasing and all these other things. And listen, that's what social media is. I think it's on the consumer to educate themselves and evolve and become smart enough to follow the right people. Because there's a lot of good people out there doing a lot of good work. And I think it's just going to take time to kind of sift through it all. My background. So I started out just like everyone else. I was a gambling addict. I used to play poker in my mom's basement when I was 16. I would deposit offshore, bet on baseball games when I was young and spend too much money on those things and not enough money on, you know, things that I should have been spending money on throughout college. And we were degenerates. I mean, I remember 2007 during the Giants Super Bowl run. My friends are all Giants fans at Penn State. We all bet on every money line every week. You know, I mean, it's just there was no analytical reasons for it. We just liked to gamble. But then obviously once you learn and you make a lot of mistakes and you piss away a lot of credit card bills and a lot of max out a lot of accounts, you learn. And I would say in my 20s, like later 20s, I started to kind of be a little more analytical with my process. That's also around the time that I was working in broadcasting this whole time. I was, you know, radio, TV. I worked for minor league baseball, local TV. Like I made that circuit. I worked all over. I don't want to give you my resume. It's not that exciting. But in right around the time I turned 30, my early 30s, I left the broadcasting business and I got into finance because I was settling down. I got engaged. I didn't see a whole lot of future with TV. So I became a financial advisor. I studied. I took all my exams, licensing exams. I'm legit. And it was at that time, you know, I would say about 5 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, I really started to change my gambling style because I started to learn risk management, buy low, sell high, you know, contrarian, all this stuff. And that's really what turned me, I think, into someone who can be successful at talking about gambling. And then the industry evolved, obviously, in 2019, about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when PASPA was repealed. And then all these networks started to pop up and I got a job for Sports Grid. And the rest is history, right? Because it just all kind of took off from there. But I really think it was the time away from broadcasting, working in finance, that kind of changed the way that I view the gambling industry. And I think it, you know, gave me a little credibility, I guess, to be an analyst. And I've been able to kind of parlay that, pun intended, into a pretty successful run at this. And I love doing it. It's a blast. I love being a voice of responsibility for what I think is a very irresponsible generation.
Oh yeah.
I'm okay with being the dad. I have dad bod, dad jokes. Like, I'm cool with that. I'm in my mid to late 30s. I'm not trying to be cool. I'm not trying to be hip. I'm not trying to be like a male model, you know, on Instagram. Like, I just love what I do. I love talking sports and I love helping people bet. It's fun.
Well, that's awesome. No, I definitely relate with a lot of that. Just a guy that likes sports and likes to bet on sports. So without further ado, let's get into the rotation. We'll go in chronological order and just run through some of these games, and I'll give some rapid fire thoughts of my own. There are a good deal of plays I like, but not included in those is the first game on Thursday, 12:15 p.m. Eastern time. The Maryland Terrapins, the 8th seed in the South region, taking on the West Virginia Mountaineers. And I'm sure you can maybe speak to this one a little bit more as, a Big Ten guy, maybe saw a little bit of Maryland this year. We are seeing West Virginia as a short favorite in this game.
Yeah, I think West Virginia's probably the right side here. I thought Maryland at 2.5 was going to come down a little bit. I bet Maryland plus 2.5. The market didn't really move. It went down to 2. Gained about 5 or 10 cents, I think, on the money line. And then I looked into some of the, a little more digging deep into what Maryland was this year. And I didn't love the coaching matchup. So I came back on WVU money line, and I hope, maybe it'll land too, but I don't feel very confident on this game. I do that a lot. By the way, I know that sounds nuts, but I do that a lot with a lot of the shorter seeded games. I'll make a play early on a dog if I think the line's going to move towards them, like right when the line drops, and some I'll keep, but others that because I don't do any research on the game when I fire away, and it's really hard when the lines drop, they move very quickly. They can move a point, 2 points within 30 minutes. So you don't really have time to like research the game and look at the matchup and digest it. So I'll go on gut instinct a lot with a lot of these 8, 9, 7, 10 matchups. I'll bet the dog ATS with the hope, or the favorite on the money line, with the hope that I get some CLV and I can come back on the other side. Didn't work out with this game really. So I kind of used it as a wash. I came back on WVU. The nugget that stood out to me here was Kevin Willard has really been bad in opening round tourney games, and Bob Huggins has been good. So I think West Virginia's got the coaching edge, evenly matched game. I think West Virginia probably wins, but it's not a great betting angle game, I don't think.
Okay. I want to get into a game that I'm kind of intrigued by, and it's something that I'm going to say a few times here on the course of the pod and plays that I like. And this is the next game that tips on Thursday involving a mid-major in the Furman Paladines taking on the Virginia Cavaliers. This also a South region game. And I'm interested and have bet Furman. I got it at +5 in the hook. And Jared, the thing that I always find interesting, particularly about mid-majors, is if they can shoot and if they can score and they get in that underdog role, they can become dangerous pretty quickly because they're the ones out there with nothing to lose. Maybe the favorite gets a little tight. And I also think, by the way, just a generic bracket observation that I had this year was a lot of these 12s through 15s are legitimately good teams. And it's not just – I don't think you can pencil in the 4s, 5s, 6s – or excuse me, the 3s, 4s, 5s, etc. into the round of 32, because I think there's a lot of talent here with a lot of these teams, and I'll get into some of the other ones that I like. But Furman can score, as I said, 11th in the nation in points per game. And with Virginia, I don't get the same sense of mystique and dominance that you have with previous Virginia teams. And obviously with Virginia, you know that they like to slow the game down and keep the game in the 40s and 50s. Duke did just get to 59. Lowly Louisville scored 60 on them in the beginning of the month. And so I just look at some of that. Duke got hosed in overtime in a game in Charlottesville about a month ago and was able to score in the 60s. So I'm not expecting Furman to score the 80 points a game that it usually gets, but I expect Furman to be in that upper 50s, low 60s territory, which is enough to at least cover 5 in the hook. So I think Furman is definitely live here. What do you think?
I think Bob Richey's a really good coach. I don't know if Furman wins the game. I do think the style they play can cause Virginia a lot of problems. And when you look at Furman's games when they've managed up, listen, they play Penn State really close, and Penn State is the opposite of Virginia. They're not at the, you know, Penn State shoots a million threes, Virginia doesn't. The other game that caught my eye on Furman's schedule this year was at NC State, where they got, you know, kind of run off the floor a little bit. But again, NC State's a fast tempo team, shoots a ton of threes. That's not Virginia. So I think the style here is favorable, and Furman isn't going to face a team that's going to try to run with them. You know, they have a contrasting style, and I think that helps. Tony Bennett, 2-3-7 against the number in round of 64 games. So Virginia hasn't been good in these spots against the spread. And I think Bob Ritchie and the style that they play, the Paladins have a decent chance to be live here. I'm on Furman plus 5.5. I didn't bet the money line. I think Furman in my bracket. Actually, no, I have UVA in my bracket. But I have them losing to the San Diego State in the next round. So maybe I'll flip to Furman. But I think this is going to be a tight game. I agree with you.
Okay, another game that figures to be tight is the third game on the docket. That's the Utah State Aggies taking on the Missouri Tigers in a 10-7 game, also in the South region. Utah State, a short favorite, it appears here, and I'm always intrigued by those lower seeds favored over the higher seeds. It kind of feels like the postseason version of the unranked favorite over the ranked team, which is usually a pretty popular system here. I don't have much in terms of what I want to do from an investable strategy in this game. How do you look at it?
Utah State here. And so first of all, yes, that unranked home favorite thing was very popular this year. The lower seeded team's favorite does not have quite the same ROI. 29-27-1. So okay. It's not a very I would say it's not an actionable trend. I think you have to dig deeper and figure out a way to bet the game, just based off the matchup. But this matchup is not good for Missouri because they give up a ton of threes, and that's what Utah State does. Now, I think the ball handlers for Utah State might be a little overwhelmed. SEC, you know, athletes from Mizzou, and Dennis Gates likes to play fast, and we'll see how Ashworth and those littler guards handle that. But I think Utah State's going to shoot 35 or 40 threes in this game. And I think if they go in, Missouri's really going to struggle to win.
All right. I suppose we won't spend a ton of time here on the 1-16 matchups, but those are the next two in chronological order. Kansas and Howard, Alabama against the winner of the game that's about to tip between Texas A&M Corpus Christi and Southeast Missouri. We do know in the Kansas game, I believe it's a 22-point line that Kansas is laying, total of 146. Bill Self will be back. I know sometimes I don't know if it's an actionable trend, but like that whole hangover with the defending champs, like maybe that's an angle if you think the number's a little inflated, but I'm obviously not getting involved in either of these 116 games.
Oh, I kind of like Kansas, and the reason why is – the trend, this has been a very actionable trend in the tournament. And I tweeted these out. This was one of the ones that I tweeted out this week. I do have a trends thread with a lot of little nuggets that I think are fun to chew on this week, because I do think not all trends are created equal. Certain trends are really good at painting context around what's happening instead of just the overall long-term backdated view. I actually think some of these trends, this one specifically, does do a good job with context. Teams coming into the tournament off a blowout loss. It doesn't happen often, because usually if you're getting blown out in your conference tournament, you're probably not making the field of 64. But it does happen occasionally. And if you are coming off a loss of 20 or more, teams are 22-11-1 in the round of 64.
Wow.
And Kansas obviously got blasted by Texas in the Big 12 final. So I jumped in at Kansas laying 20.5. I mean, I don't need to go through the handicap of why they're better than Howard. That obvious is, I think that's obvious. But it's more of just the buy low, sell high mentality of that trend that I think is very intriguing. And you get a college kid, college team that is clearly pissed off after getting their butts kicked. And I could see this being a pretty big blowout, because let's be honest, Howard's really bad and the MEAC's really struggled in this tournament.
Sure. Let's stay in this South region. And you talked about San Diego State, a team that you have getting to the second weekend in your bracket. They are 5-point chalk against Charleston. And it sure feels like College of Charleston is going to be a very trendy dog in the round of 64. So tell us a little bit. Is this just kind of a fade of the trendy dog? You must like some things about San Diego State if you got them into the second weekend.
I think the Mountain West is overbaked into this trend, and you know everyone's going to be fading them because of what we've heard in prior seasons. I think this Mountain West is a little different, though. For example, they actually are in the top 10 in three-point shooting percentage this year as a conference, and they're at top 8 actually. So this is not your granddad's, you know, uncle's Mountain West. Like they run, they shoot. They're a little more up-tempo than prior conferences. Obviously, Utah State, a big reason why. New Mexico, a big reason why. But even the San Diego State team. I mean, last year, San Diego State was 167. And we view San Diego State in very high regard, even last year. They were an 8 seed in the tournament. Yeah. They were coming in with a lot of momentum. They were still outside the top 160 in KenPom's offensive efficiency ratings. This year, they come in 100 spots higher. And they're not a great shooting team, but they're much better than they were last year. Again, about 50 spots higher in the EFG rating. So I just think they're a little bit of a better offensive team than prior San Diego State's.
Sure.
And they can run a little bit. They've got that athletic guard, the little guy Trammell, who can move. And I think their defense obviously is a top 10. I mean, they have the defense and the defensive profile to make a Final Four run, frankly, but it's always been their offense that's been a little bit lacking. But I think this year, they're a little bit more offensively gifted to handle some of those droughts, but I still think they're going to run into some problems later on in the tournament when they face Alabama, who's just light years ahead. But I do think San Diego State's good enough to make the Sweet 16 this year.
All right. Final game in the South region on Thursday afternoon sees the Princeton Tigers out of the Ivy League take on the Arizona Wildcats. Arizona 14-point chalk here. Gosh, Jared, it sure feels like Arizona clicking at the perfect time after winning the Pac-12 tournament and avenging a loss against UCLA from the end of the regular season. 14 here, I'm not going to argue with it. You know, what stands out here in terms of Arizona in this game, you know, if it can cover and kind of how the region sets up for the number 2 seed?
Just to be clear, I bet Charleston plus 5.5 in the other game, but I think San Diego State wins. I think it'll be a tight game, just to get that out there, because I do have San Diego State advancing in my bracket, but I took 5.5 with Charleston because, I mean, who knows? I like the idea that all these games are going to be close, but I'm sure there's going to be middles,
right? Yeah.
Arizona Princeton, interesting game actually. Honestly, I think a Princeton first to 15 bet is warranted. I don't think they'll have much after that. I think the Ivy League teams have always done a good job early in games, first halves. They're tough. They're very well disciplined team, but then the athletes eventually take over. And I think it's especially true with Arizona. I could see Arizona coming out really jittery because they're just a high energy team. And then eventually the athletes will settle in, and I think Arizona will take control of the game from a physical perspective. But Princeton's offense can be very tough to prepare for. They run a lot of back cuts, motion, all kinds of crazy stuff. So early on in the game, before Tommy Lloyd makes his adjustments, I could see Princeton having some success. So the only way I'd bet this game is a first to 15. And then I'd say if you get a good number live on Arizona, then maybe that'd be a good bet. The way I see this bracket playing out, I've got Bama San Diego State in the top. I've got Creighton Arizona in my Sweet 16 on the bottom. And I've got I like Creighton a little bit here. I think you know, a little bit of a tough draw in the Big East tournament, and I think they're a better team analytically. Like they're one of the better teams analytically in this entire region. It's just, you know, they're kind of up against the juggernaut Bama, but I think they're better than Arizona, frankly, at their peak, because I think again Arizona is just so volatile. I can't trust them in these big moments, and they've also got some injury issues with Ballo's got the broken hand and Creasa with the shoulder. It seems like every year around this time they get banged up. I remember last year that was a big reason why they got their run derailed. I've got Utah State beating Mizzou, but it's really Arizona, Creighton, Bama, San Diego State, and then Bama and Creighton, and then I got Bama in the Final Four.
Okay. All right, let's move forward and go to the West region, where the 8-9 game on Thursday sees the Arkansas Razorbacks taking on the Illinois Fighting Illini. Arkansas, a short 2-point favorite. Gosh, remember the beginning of the year, Eric Musselman had all those McDonald's All-Americans coming in. There was a lot of buzz about Arkansas back in October, November. I'm sure they thought they'd be higher on the seed list than an 8 seed. They did get to the regional final last year, in the West region, lost to Duke in that regional final. How do you see this game with Arkansas as short favorite?
Illinois is a fade. There's a lot of drama there. Underwood's calling players out. It's weird. I don't know what's going on. They didn't really show anything in the Big Ten tournament. Arkansas obviously had the big lead on A&M, blew the big lead. That's the vibe with them. Tough to lay points, but if I were going to bet this game, I think I did get to the window on Arkansas -2.5 because I don't see it with Illinois, and I think I could see this game being a blowout if Illinois throws in the towel early. But Arkansas has obviously been known to give up those leads. The one thing about Arkansas is they gave up a ton of threes, but Illinois can't shoot. So I think matchup wise, it favors Arkansas. I think Nick Smith's the best player on the floor. And I think if Underwood's still calling dudes out, it's the chemistry with Illinois, I think, is a fade right now.
Yeah, no, it's a great point about the chemistry with Illinois as well. It's a quick turnaround, obviously having to play on Thursday and getting ready for a March Madness game. I'm sure more goes into travel and ticket arrangements and all sorts of things that even if you're a buttoned up program with everything good in the locker room, can be a lot. So with things that are going on with Underwood, it definitely kind of rings true with me. Another 8-9 game that I want to get to, which I'm actually interested in, is Auburn as a 1-point favorite against the Iowa Hawkeyes, this in the Midwest region. And honestly, games in Birmingham, I'm looking at Auburn playing a de facto home game here. I think there's going to be a level of kind of muck it up, grind it out, real tough Bruce Pearl grittiness that might make things a little more challenging for Iowa. I lean to the Auburn side.
Yeah, I'm with you here. I bet Auburn money line. The one thing that scares me is Auburn's they just take so many dumb shots. And Iowa's, you need to punish Iowa's defense for being so bad. You need to get into the paint. You need to get to the line. You need to make their defense feel the heat of being one of the worst defenses in the country, especially away from Iowa City. But Auburn goes through these stretches where they just take a bunch of bad shots, and that's what scares me. Now, at their best, I think Auburn can beat almost anyone in the country. They're that athletic. They run. When they make their threes, obviously they've got all the other pieces in place. As long as they take smart shots and they get into the paint, they should win this game. But we'll see if they go through any of those stretches. Kind of like San Diego State sometimes, one of those teams. Good team, good athletes, good coach, but just they struggle at times. They're very disconnected on offense. So hopefully they get over that hump and they win, because I did bet Auburn on the money line. I've got them in my bracket too.
Let's go to the East region, where the Duke Blue Devils are certainly coming in, playing probably their best basketball of the season, having just won the ACC tournament. But Oral Roberts certainly looks like a team that could garner a little bit of love at the betting window as well. It is a blue blood, though, in Duke. So Duke is laying 6 in the hook here. What do you think here? I don't think I'm going to get involved. I don't know what to make of Duke. I give Shire a lot of credit for turning their season around when it looked like they may be, close to the bubble. And now they're a 5 seed that maybe could make some noise in the East region. Just your thoughts on this game.
Yeah, I'm torn on Duke. I think we know what we're getting with Oral Roberts. They're a team that's going to score. They're a team that has maybe the best player on the floor in Max Asemus, which is surprising in a game against Duke. But I think overall they don't have the full Monty. Like when they played Houston, they got run off the floor. And I know that was very early in the year and it was a spot that was really tough, but they only scored 45 points in that game and they gave up 83. So I don't think Duke defensively is as good as Houston, obviously. But they're still in the top 25 defensive efficiency. They're a top 5 in the conference in defensive efficiency. So the narrative on the ACC is very down, and that usually tells me that the conference will probably perform better than expected. But there's some tough matchups in this conference. I think Virginia, as we mentioned with Furman, has got a tough matchup. We'll get to the Miami matchup in a bit with Drake, but I think Duke should win this game. I think they're the only team in the ACC that I really trust to win multiple games in the tournament right now. It's just a matter of can Shire get the most out of these freshmen? I mean, they're one of the youngest teams in college basketball this year. Their D1 experience is outside the top 250. So I know Roach from last year's Final Four team, but the rest of the rotation, Filipowski, White, I mean, they're all freshmen. So what do you get from them in their first tourney game? That scares me. The upside, I think, is very high. They're big. They're athletic. They've got the big man in the middle that, not a lot of teams have. But what's the nerves level and the sphincter tightness
sure.
when they get into these games. Now, they look great in the ACC tournament. They didn't play a close game. So we'll see. We'll see how they handle an Oral Roberts team that has been there before, frankly. They've been there more than a lot of these guys on the Duke roster has. So I think this is a very interesting game. The line being so tight, I think, is telling you that this is not just the blowout. But I think in the end, Duke does pull it out. And I think they're probably a Sweet 16 teams in terms of their talent.
Okay, I want to get to a low major team that I'm interested in this game in the Midwest region. And that's the Colgate Raiders taking on the Texas Longhorns. And Jared, I talked about it. Mid-majors, low majors that can score, that can shoot, are always going to intrigue me a little bit because it just takes one game to get hot, and maybe you're even live on the money line. And, I think here, I look at this setup, and I think of Colgate as, I mentioned in the onset, I'm a Temple guy. I'm crossing my fingers that Temple hires Matt Langle because he has done an exceptional job in building a program in the middle of nowhere, New York, into a mainstay in the NCAA tournament every year out of the Patriot League. We're seeing Colgate. So you have a roster, obviously, of returning players that has played in March Madness, gave Wisconsin a pretty decent game last year in a 3-14 game. Number one in the nation at 41% from three-point field goal range are the Colgate Raiders. So, again, they're just checking a lot of boxes for me in terms of a team with nothing to lose that can shoot, that can score, that's been there before. And also on the Texas side, I would caution you very much so. Buyer beware here on the Longhorns. Try not to have some recency bias on the fact that they beat Kansas twice and won the Big 12 championship. We saw them when Shaka, I believe, was a 3-seed there, win the Big 12 title, tournament title, and then lose to Abilene Christian in a 3-14 game. I know it's different with Rodney Terry there now, but I also think there's some pressure on Rodney Terry because this is a guy that you would think at most programs, if this was the job that he had done as an interim coach, he would earn the right to become the full-time guy, but it's Texas, and they're always going to shoot for the stars when it comes to their coaching hire. So if he bows out the first weekend, or maybe even in the Sweet 16, I could see them opening a national search if they haven't already to decide to do that anyway. So I just think a little bit of pressure here on Texas. Everybody's going to be talking about the round of 32 possible matchup with A&M. And I think Colgate goes out there and hits some shots and keeps this thing close. So I like them plus the big number.
Colgate first to 15 is definitely a bet you should make. I think that's the perfect example of where the first to 15 bets have value. I'd put the Ivy League game in that category also. I think eventually Texas will wear them down. And I think in a closer game, I think we need to give Texas a little more credit for the roster construction on this year's team compared to that team in 2020, whenever it was they beat Abilene or they lost Abilene.
2021.
Christian. Yeah. Like this team is like Serge Ibari Rice was on those New Mexico State tournament teams. He understands how to win in this time. And then they have Carr and the other big man that played on that tournament team from a couple years ago. So, or from last year, excuse me. So I think there's a little bit more. I do think there's a little bit more juice to this Texas team under Rodney Terry. For some reason, they've kind of rallied around him. And I'm not going to say they're going to make this big run of the Final Four. I do think their ceiling is probably the Elite Eight against Houston. But I think this is a really good Texas team. And I've been prophesizing for the last 3 weeks that I was going to give a lot, an added boost than normal to the team that won the Big 12 tournament. Because I think this year the Big 12 tournament's different than it's been in any other year. And I think it meant a lot to Texas to win that tournament. And I think that confidence is going to carry over a little bit more than it did in the Shaka years. Shaka sold his soul to the devil to get that VCU Final Four run. He's been cursing the tournament ever since. And I don't think Chris Beard, it just obviously wasn't the right situation for him to be coaching this team still. So I think there's a bit of more good karma vibes around Rodney Terry's ascent. And I think, you got to get lucky in this tournament to make a deep run. I definitely think they beat Colgate. We'll see in the next round who they get. We'll see what the matchup is. But I wouldn't be shocked if Texas plays a little better than expected coming off of this one here. I understand your buy low, sell high vibes, but man, Colgate just, it scares me. Their competition level outside of that conference this year, which has been even worse than usual. So we'll see. I think Colgate can cover, and I think first to 15 is a good bet, but I don't know if they can pull this one off.
All right, let's get to another 7-10 game, and no surprise, the 7-10's been ping-ponging around that pick'em area. I believe Boise in this 7-10 game in the West region against Northwestern did start as a favorite, but I'm seeing Northwestern as a short chalk now. Northwestern, a again, your Penn State guy, watched a lot of Big Ten, I'm sure. Northwestern was a pretty nice surprise this year with how the Wildcats just kept winning and kind of flying under the radar. We've seen this at times with Chris Collins at Northwestern where it's not flashy. They maybe don't have NBA prospects, but there they are in the top three, top four of the Big Ten. So your thoughts on this matchup with Boise State, another team out of the Mountain West?
Yeah, I kind of like Boise a little bit here. Again, the Mountain West is going to be really undervalued in this tournament because everyone's going to be talking about how bad they've been recently. And also the one note and the shout out to the guys over at Three Man Weave for pointing this out to me. By the way, I don't know if you guys have had a chance to listen to their podcast.
Oh, yeah, I like those guys.
Those three guys, they have a 2-hour podcast where they go in depth on every game. They know more about college basketball in their pinky than I do in my entire body. They're unbelievable. But one of the write-ups they had was on the Boise State pick and roll offense and how impressive that facet, that strategy has been for Boise State this year. They're one of the better pick and roll offenses in college basketball per shot quality. And Northwestern's outside the top 200 in points per possession defending the pick and roll. So again, you talk about little things throughout the course of a game that can tilt the scales. Neither of these teams wow you offensively. Northwestern can be really bad offensively at times. Both teams are good defensively. I think the Big Ten has been kind of pushed down this year. I think it's a pretty mediocre league. Don't let that number two seed fool you for Northwestern. If things would have went different tiebreaker wise, they could have finished like seventh on the last day of the year.
Okay.
It was just, I just think the Big Ten was such a train wreck this year. I don't consider them the second best team in that league. Like they're probably seventh or, sixth or somewhere in that range. So Boise State had a chance to win their conference tournament. San Diego State game was tight. The Utah State game. I think overall they're a better team than they showed in that game, and I think they're going to win this one.
All right, again, I don't want to spend too much time on the 116s. Northern Kentucky catching 19.5 against Houston as this game is being played in Birmingham. I know there's been some stuff about Marcus Sasser and his health for the Cougars. Maybe that impacts if Houston can cover here. What do you think?
Yeah. Northern Kentucky has been my team. I don't know if you've been following me, anyone who's listening over the last couple of years, Northern Kentucky has been like my squad. I bet on them so much and they've impressed. Darren Horn is such a good coach and Marquez Warwick is a very underrated player, probably the best overall scorer in the Horizon League in terms of how he can get to the rim and shoot the three. I mean, he's just so versatile, but this is a nightmare matchup for my Norse. They play this like amoeba zone, and it's just going to get shredded by Houston. There's going to be 100 offensive rebounds in this game for the Cougars. If I'm Kelvin Sampson, frankly, I sit Marcus Sasser here. I don't even play him. It's just a terrible matchup. Can Northern Kentucky make some threes and cover 20? I mean, the line's enormous, sure. But I can't get to the window on them because it's either Houston or pass.
All right, on we roll to another game in the East region where it's the Louisiana Lafayette Raging Cajuns catching 11 against the Tennessee Volunteers. Jared, I don't know, maybe I'm just a broken record here with a narrative that's out there, but they Rick Barnes in March. And yeah. Louisiana, they can score, averaging about 76 points a game. Vols come in having lost 2 out of 3. You look at some of their recent wins, they played South Carolina, who's obviously not any good. So they have one nice win against Arkansas towards the end of the regular season schedule, but I can't give up double digits with Rick Barnes in March. So I think I'll take the Raging Cajuns.
The narrative here is they're begging you to take the dog. Not only Rick Barnes, but also Ziegler being hurt. Like any time your best player is hurt going into March Madness, it's going to get a lot more attention in the media than a normal injury would to a star team, a star player injured on a big team. In January, nobody cares because we're watching and the NFL, but in March, everyone's going to be talking about it this week. So it's going to naturally inflate the line a little bit against Tennessee. So you would imagine right there, you get value on Louisiana, but then you talk about all the things you talk about. Rick Barnes has been really bad, 5-8 against the spread in round of 64 games. How can you lay double digits? Well, the Balls have beaten 10 teams this year by 30 or more. So when they do win, they tend to win big. Does that mean it's going to happen in this game? I have no idea. You mentioned Louisiana as a good offensive team. They don't shoot as many threes as I would have expected a team that shoots it as well as they do. They're actually at, and again, this is where KenPom can be very helpful. Don't just look at the first number on the line. They're a top 50 team three-point shooting. That's great. That means they're a good three-point shooting team, right? Well, they're outside the top 300 in attempts. So they don't take a ton of threes. So who cares if they can make a bunch of them? If on volume they don't take a bunch, that's where, frankly, I would say that they're a less volatile team because they rely a lot more on two-point shots, and they're pretty good making those too, but they're terrible at the free throw line. And I think rebounding-wise, they're going to struggle a little bit. So this is a really good Tennessee team. Let's not call – I know Ziegler's out, but – Jordan James is an all-conference type player, and they've got the guard, Vescovi, who can kind of hit you with those tight threes. He shoots over 36%. But am I excited to lay a lot with Tennessee? No, but I could see them winning this game by 30. I really could, because of just the athletes they have.
All right, let's get to that 7-10 game in the Midwest region. Your Penn State Nittany Lions catching 3 in the hook against Texas A&M. Maybe Texas A&M a little pissed off. I mean, it's a tournament. You shouldn't need more motivation. But everybody's talking about A&M as one of the most underseeded bracket teams in the bracket. Of course, they got left out. They were the first team out, I believe, last year. They got some guards at A&M that can really score. How do you see this one?
This is – I'm obviously torn here. I think Penn State's going to struggle to keep their legs for the full game. At least that's how the negative approach that I have it playing out in my head. If Penn State, let's just hypothetically speaking, if this was the Big Ten SEC Challenge game played on a neutral floor in like the middle of December and Penn State was catching 3.5, I would be all over Penn State. Because the style is just, it's just a terrible matchup for A&M. They play in a conference that is the worst three-point shooting conference in America, and Penn State's the best three-point shooting team, I think, in the country in terms of not only – like, the percentage doesn't indicate that, but I think just how they get to their spots does indicate that. And I think that's because they're one of the best coach teams in the country, and they're just – they're so good at executing their offense. But they're terrible on the glass. They're better on the defensive glass than I expect, but – they're not going to get any offensive rebounds in this game. A&M is going to box out. And I think physically speaking, if A&M is able to get into the paint and wear Penn State down, Penn State had to play 5 games in 7 days. They played the Sunday game, regular season finale, then 4 days in 5 nights for the Big Ten tourney. And then they had to play the Thursday game this week. So committee didn't do them any favors. They didn't give them the extra day. I'm worried physically how Penn State hangs, but if they can hang and if they can find another gear, and I'll give them credit, they've been finding extra gears all month, all season long. They have the type of team that can give A&M a lot of problems here. And I think they've got, the type of offense that can give Texas problems too, because you live and die by the three. So I hope they make a bunch of threes. Obviously I'm going to bet Penn State as a dog, but I'm worried that our legs are going to run out from us at some point in the second half.
Last game of the night on Thursday sees the UNC Asheville. Actually, I don't even know what they're called. But UNC Asheville taking on the UCLA Bruins, and there's a 2:15 game in the West region. And you talked about, we've mentioned a few high seeds with injuries. UCLA, obviously, chief among them, with Jalen Clark out for the year, and I believe Adem Bona is the other injury for UCLA to monitor here. So a little disappointing because, I certainly thought that UCLA was national championship level good, and maybe they're able. Bona might be able to come back at some point, but it feels like maybe the stars aren't quite aligning for UCLA. They are a big favorite in this game of 17 and the hook. Your thoughts on this game and UCLA's tournament prospects?
I like UCLA a lot. I think when you look at the injuries, I don't want to go too over the top because the same thing happened to them 2 years ago. Two of their key guys got hurt and they still made the Final Four run. The names are eluding me off the top of my head, but they were like mid-season injuries, so you could say Mick Cronin's had a little more time to adjust the lineup than he did now, which the Jalen Clark thing happened very recently. I think Bone is going to be fine from what I heard. He's just it's like an elbow strain, so I think he'll be back. We'll see if he's 100%. Obviously, that could change things. But listen, this is a UCLA team that they have something on this year's team that they didn't have last year, and that's Amari on the 2 years ago team, the Final Four team, and that's Amari Bailey. Now, UCLA 2 years ago, they did it with a lot of smoke and mirrors. They first four defense, not a very explosive offense. This year with Bailey, they're a really good offense. And I think that he adds an element to their offense that they didn't have. Now, he's been a little timid with his shot selection, and that's coaching. Hopefully Mick Cronin pulls him aside and says, listen, you're our best player on the floor. I mean, he's better than, you know, he's a blue chip caliber prospect, freshman kid. He's better than Campbell and Jaquez, I think, at his peak. He's more athletic and get to the rim and create his own shot. I just don't know if he's up to that task. If he is, then I don't think you're going to miss Jalen Clark as much as people are talking. Now, Clark's a great defender. They'll probably need him in that game against Gonzaga when they're, you know, dealing with all those weapons. But in terms of the short term, against Asheville and against Boise State or Northwestern, I think it'll be Boise State. UCLA should have no issues getting to the Sweet 16. I think it's a very favorable draw for them. And then they get to be in Vegas, which is basically a home game for them. And then the Gonzaga game, to me, that's the big game. I think the winner of that UCLA-Gonzaga game goes to the Final Four. And that's how I see that region playing out.
All right, let's get to the first game on Friday, where the USC Trojans, out of the Pac-12, taking on Tom Izzo's Michigan State Spartans. Spartans are a short 2-point favorite in this game, 7-10 game in the East region. You would think a nice contingent of Sparty alum and faithful at this game at Nationwide Arena in Columbus, Ohio. I love Tyson Walker. He's one of my favorite players in college basketball. He just feels like he can step up and get a bucket for them in big moments. And, you know, never really he made some big shots in that game last year against Duke in the round of 32. The Hauser kid can really shoot. I don't know. USC, we had Tanner McGrath on from the Action Network a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about how phony he thinks USC is. And Pac-12 is a down league. I'm really going with tournament experience, Izzo, and a better league here at a short number. I think MSU is a side here.
I'm kind of on the other side here, to be honest with you. Here's the thing about USC that I really like. I think they're, first of all, they play in a conference that I think is built for success in the tournament. Pac-12's had a ton of success, actually the most profitable conference against the number in the round of 64 in recent years. And Michigan State's defense has been really trending down. AJ Hogard looks a little disconnected. It goes back to the Illinois thing. Very disconnected from Izzo and what they're trying to accomplish there. That was a dud performance against Ohio State. Maybe they come back, and bounce back from that. But I think the defense for Michigan State trending down really scares me against the USC offense that is shooting 43% from three over the last month. So Andy Enfield's had a lot of success early on in the tournament, 4-1 against the number in round of 64 games. And I think the Big Ten is a play-off conference, and the Pac-12 is a play-on conference for me early on in this tournament. And so it's kind of the perfect storm there. So I took 2.5 with USC. I could see Michigan State winning a close game, but I do think Andy Enfield will have his guys ready for this one.
All right, well, a little disagreement never hurt anybody. Let's keep things moving. Kennesaw State and Xavier. We talk about coaches and Sean Miller back at Xavier doing a really nice job. 11.5 point chalk here are the Musketeers. I don't have much on this game. Don't know a lot about Kennesaw. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Kennesaw is a really tough team. A lot of talented transfers. They've been together for a while. I mean, they beat Liberty twice this year. Liberty's really good. So I think Kennesaw is going to have their moments here, but I do think Xavier is a little bit better equipped to play in the tournament without Fremantle, as crazy as that sounds, because they play a little slower, they don't run as much, and their defense has actually been trending in a positive direction since he's come out. So I think that's where I'm at with this game. Would probably lay it with Xavier if I had to bet it, but I'm not betting it. I do think Xavier wins and advances. I think they actually probably – I think I have them in the Sweet 16. Yeah, I have Xavier in the Sweet 16 losing to Texas.
Another 3-14 matchup in the South. It is the Baylor Bears and the Gauchos of UC Santa Barbara. You know, Jared, this one's interesting to me because I know it's different players, but we have seen Baylor as a high seed be a little vulnerable at times. Think back to that RJ Hunter Georgia State game. Do the Gauchos have a shot here? Like, how do you see this game?
The Gauchos absolutely have a shot in this game. Go watch the Creighton game from 2 years ago in the tournament for UCSB. It's basically the same team.
They were right in that game.
Right in that game. This is a very John Pierce Luis, he's the point guard. He was the point guard on that team too. This is a battle tested Santa Barbara team. They play in a league that doesn't get a ton of attention, the Big West, but preseason they were actually one of the more talked about mid majors in the country. Kind of fell off a little bit in the middle of their conference season, lost three in a row in the middle of February, but then bounced right back and really blew through the Big West tournament. They won the final by double digits. And listen, Baylor defensively is not going to shut anybody down. I mean, this is a far cry from the Baylor team that won the tournament 2 years ago. Like, it's just a completely different team. They do not defend. They don't run people off the 3-point line. They're a very undisciplined team, which is surprising because Scott Drew is such a good coach on the defensive end. They have great guard play though. And I think that's why in March, they have a great coach. They have great guard play. They'll probably get by this game, but I could see Santa Barbara being close. I took 10.5 with UCSB. I think this is one of the more interesting games of the early round because I think you'll hear a lot about how great the Big 12 is and how great Baylor's offense is. And then UCSB all of a sudden goes toe for toe with them. But I think Baylor probably wins by a bucket or two.
Well, no, I'd be with you. I like to see this game go right down to the wire. And I'm always in favor of the low and mid majors shining when they get a little bit of a moment on a big stage. Let's go to a couple of mid majors that are becoming mainstays, if you don't already consider them mainstays in the NCAA bracket. And that's the St. Mary's Gaels and the VCU Rams, as St. Mary's is a short 4-point favorite in this game. Jared, I got to be honest. I got a buddy of mine who went to Pepperdine and follows the WCC very closely. And he says, I don't know that I would like St. Mary's a lot in the tournament because the Gaels aren't that athletic and they can't get up and down with teams the way that you need to be able to when you see some more athletic teams in the tournament. And we know VCU and Havoc and the press and I don't know. There's something about VCU right now. Mike Rhodes doing a really nice job. A-10 tournament and regular season champions. I kind of feel like Gonzaga really cut St. Mary's open in that WCC title game. And are they able to hit the reset button? I'm not sure. I think the Rams are the side.
I'm on the other side of here.
Okay.
I think the A-10's really down this year. And I think just overall the A-10, I don't really trust any of those teams. VCU's – now, don't get me wrong. VCU is the best of the A-10 teams, no doubt. But remember that trend with the teams coming off the 20-point blowout losses and how good they do in their next game? We get another one here with St. Mary's that just got absolutely hammered in the WCC final by Gonzaga. And a lot of people are going to be hopping off the train after watching that. But I think they're a much better team than that game. That was just Gonzaga just wanted that game more. And when they play at that level, I don't think there's a lot of teams, frankly, in the country that can run with Gonzaga when they're playing at that level. VCU is not one of those teams. Offensively, they just can't shoot. And they really struggle from three. And I think that's going to be the key here. The possession length will be key, and can VCU get into those St. Mary's guards? And I think Mahaney is a freshman first tournament. I think I could see him getting rattled at times, and maybe St. Mary's gets out of their offense a little bit. But I don't think people realize how good the St. Mary's team really is. They battled Houston toe for toe. I mean, absolutely went toe for toe with Houston middle of the season. And when you look back at that game now, you're like, wow, because Houston's just been blowing people out left and right. So I think at their peak, I think St. Mary's can be a team that's a Sweet 16, Elite 8 team. I do think they win this game. I think they cover this game. We'll see what their end road is. I do have them losing to UConn in the next round, but I'll be honest, that was a really tough game to predict for me. I think the winner of that game actually goes to the Elite Eight. So I think St. Mary's, because of maybe that game against Gonzaga in the final, is going to be a little bit on the buy low side here.
Okay. 2:15 game in the East region, Vermont, the Catamounts out of the America East Conference are catching 11 against Marquette. Shaka Smart, regular season, Big East tournament champions as well. Again, Jared, I go back to with some of these teams, like the sell high opportunity, and Marquette is kind of a darling for a lot of people right now. And the story of Shaka, you know, kind of landing on his feet there in Milwaukee and tournament last year in his first year, and obviously all the success they've had this year. I just think that the tournament's very fickle, and they're one of these teams. You know, what we talked about, Baylor. I think maybe Texas, Marquette, like somebody is going to see in the first weekend is going to run into some typical, oh, this is the tournament. Like it's just like a surprise is going to hit them that it doesn't just, you're not just going to continue to coast through whoever's in front of you. And Vermont, I watched that America East final against UMass Lowell. Again, they were hitting shots, and this is another mid-major, low-major type team that has been in the NCAA tournament, gave Musselman and Arkansas a game last year. I could see Vermont covering this number. What do you think?
I think Vermont. Shaka Smart's not been good in these games, not only in the first round. He's lost six straight round of 64 games, actually, but also as a favorite of 10 or more. We hear a lot about Shaka as a dog and how great he is, and that's true. But as a favorite of 10 or more in his career, 43-62-2 against the spread. It's just not the preferred vibe for him. He likes the underdog mentality. Now, the one thing about Marquette that's been very interesting is their defense has been trending up. That's what makes them a very intriguing team, I think, long term, is they can probably shut down a defense or an offense like USC in the next round. Like they might be able to, you know, hold some of those Duke shooters in check if they can make it to the Elite Eight at the Garden, where they've been very comfortable playing at over the years too, which is another element to Marquette's region that's interesting. They get to play at the Garden where they play their Big East tournament games, where they've been very comfortable playing over the last few years, whereas Kentucky, Duke, FAU, they don't play a lot of games at the Garden. So it's a good vibe for them, I think, if they can make it to MSG in that East regional. The one thing for Vermont that is actually interesting is they play in a conference that's done really well in these games. 9-2 against the spread in the last 10 years, the America East. So in the round of 64. So it's just, or excuse me, in the tournament overall. But it's just which is basically the round of 64, because they don't advance past that very often. I think they had one year where they did. But there is just a very, I think it was the UMBC year. They're a tough team. They played a tough schedule. They're the best team in their conference by far. And I think they'll keep it close. Do they win? Maybe. But I think Marquette maybe pulls it out because they're a little more talented offensively than prior years. But their defense has been trending up. That's the key for Marquette. But yeah, this has the makings of a game. 11.5 seem way too big for me for a number to lay.
Agreement there on the Vermont Catamount side. Okay, I'm going to bypass the Iowa State game because we're waiting to see who the Cyclones draw. Let's go to Creighton and NC State. I know you've been drinking the Blue Jay Kool-Aid a little bit. Big East have pretty nice year here. We just finished talking about Marquette. Xavier's a 3 seed. Creighton, maybe a little flying under the radar as a 6 seed, and NC State, a lot of people felt like, do they even belong in the tournament? Creighton, 5.5-point favorite. You like the Blue Jays to make a deep run. Do you like them to cover here?
Yeah, I bet Creighton here at 5. I just think analytically they're an undervalued team. I like teams that are coming off of, you know, losses in their conference tournaments by double digits. And I like teams that overall are just good defensive teams that maybe haven't had good defenses in prior years. And that's what Creighton is. I mean, this is a team last year that was outside, I think, the top 80 in defensive efficiency heading into the tournament. No, they were a little higher last year, too, than I gave them credit for. But they're better this year than they were last year defensively. And again, coming off of one of those blowouts, as we talked about, in their Big East tournament. But NC State's got that trend going for them, too, because they got blown out by, I think, 30 by Clemson. They were absolutely destroyed in that game. So both teams are coming off really bad losses in their respective conference tournaments. That's a play on trend. But I think of those two teams that we're talking about here, I think I trust Creighton a lot more than I trust NC State. NC State's defense is the one thing that really scares me about them. And I think you're going to see Nembhard and Alexander have a good game in the backcourt. And yeah, I think Creighton makes a run. I like the defensive numbers. They're, again, this is a different Creighton team than we're used to seeing. They are a little bit slower. They like to defend. They're much better defensively. And I like the matchup against Arizona, and I like the matchup against Baylor. Cause again, I think I prefer them against teams that are more offensive minded teams. And I think defensively Creighton's going to really surprise some people this week because not a lot of people are talking about him after that blowout loss to Xavier in the tournament.
Yeah, no, I really like that trend you have about getting blown out in the last game of your conference tournament, and that would apply to Creighton. Staying in the Big East, the Connecticut Huskies laying 9 against Rick Pitino's Iona Gaels. This is a first-round matchup that's obviously garnering a lot of headlines with the possibility of Rick Pitino ending up back in the Big East, whether it be at St. John's or Georgetown. Iona also, again, I've talked about mid-majors that have some tournament experience, and Iona kind of checking that box for me. There's a lot of pressure on Danny Hurley, I feel like, Jared, one of the marquee brands in the Northeast. This is his 5th season at Connecticut, and he has not won a game yet in the NCAA tournament. I think you said you like UConn to make a little bit of a deep run. Do they cover 9 here?
This is an interesting game. I think analytically speaking, UConn has a case to be a number one seed. I mean, they're the fourth, aren't they the fourth ranked team in KenPom's ratings?
Fourth. They were pretty high. Was it 4?
They're 4th in KenPom's efficiency ratings. They have a case. They're definitely the most underseeded 4 team in this tournament. They might be the most underseeded team in the whole tournament. So I think we're getting the seeding line off here because I'm not as high on the MAC as I really care to talk about. And Iona is a team that just they have a little more size than some of the other teams in the MAC, but I don't see how Connecticut doesn't just bludgeon them all game long. Iona can make some shots. They can run a little bit. They can stay in it based off of that. But I don't love their defensive rebounding percentages. And I don't love their overall size against a UConn team that is coming off again, a tight, tough loss in their conference tournament, a tournament that they felt like they probably should have won. Based off of where they were coming in. Now, can they overcome what ailed them midseason when they lost 5 out of 6 in January? I hope so, because I do think they have the analytics and the defense to make a deep run in this tournament. The one positive for Iona, this game's getting played at Sienna's Arena, where Iona plays every year because they're in the same conference. That's the one edge maybe sure. You find with Iona, but I don't know if they're able to keep this one close.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point about playing in their backyard a little bit. But, yeah, Connecticut, as I said, a lot of pressure on the Huskies to make a little bit of a run. But as you said, they certainly have the talent. Let's stay in the Big East, where we have the 11th-seeded Providence Friars in the East region taking on the Kentucky Wildcats. It's funny, we're just talking about Rick Pitino, a couple of his former jobs here. I like Providence here. I think they're live on the money line. Honestly, Jared, I just didn't see anything all year from Kentucky that made me think that they're worth making a deep tournament run. Because the minute you thought that you might have had something with Kentucky, they'd go out and lose to Vanderbilt. Or, you know, whoever it was that they lost this year that they really didn't have any business losing to. You also have the revenge angle with Bryce Hopkins, who transferred from Kentucky into the Providence program. And we talk about coaches this time of year. John Calipari, we're over a decade removed from that national championship with the loaded Anthony Davis roster. There have been a lot of head-scratching losses since for Cal in the tournament. Ed Cooley just got to the second weekend. He continues to do more with less at Providence. I think Providence wins this game.
Yeah, like it's the Bryce Hopkins revenge game.
Yeah.
That's a big part to this. That's why I like Arizona State a lot in the game against Nevada, because of the Cambridge revenge. I love teams that get to face, or players that get to face the team they transferred away from the following year. I mean, it's just the irony is, and the committee has a way of putting these ironic matchups together. Trust me, they know all of this stuff. I think Cason Wallace is the guy to keep an eye on for Kentucky. He's been playing better. He's getting healthier. And we all know about Oscar Tshiebwe, but Wallace, the guy I think that is going to be the reason why they win or lose this game. Providence's interior is going to get eaten alive here, but do they have enough shooting on the outside? I think they do. And I think Hopkins is a big reason why. And Ed Cooley's a dog's been great, 60% in his career, and Calipari's under 500 in round of 64 games. This game's probably close. I could see Kentucky winning by a bucket, but I'm on Providence catching 3.5.
All right. So some agreement there on the Providence Friars. How about the Drake Miami game, 5-12 game in the Midwest region. Drake, another talented double-digit seed. Miami, though, pretty good. Got to the Elite Eight last year. I know the ACC was down this year, but Miami's got a lot of talent, and they lost by 7 to Duke in a competitive ACC semifinal in the tournament. We see Miami here only a 2.5-point favorite, though. So maybe that line's talking to some people a bit. How do you see this 5-12 game?
The Omir injury is huge. Norshad Omir, the Miami big man. He's like the best big man in the ACC. It looks like he's not going to play. You know how it is with these college games. He's questionable. Yeah. He hurt himself in the ACC tournament. If he doesn't play, this line probably closes closer to a pick 'em. And Drake, I picked Drake in the Mo Val. I think Drake is a very undervalued team. They've got probably the best all-around player on the floor on both ends and Tucker DeVries. I know Wong and Pack are, you know, elite scoring guards, but neither of them can defend a lick. And this Miami team is just allergic to defense. But they're very well coached, and that matters. I think this game will be tight. I like how Roman Penn, who's like 100 years old, gets to play in his former arena. You know, Siena transfer gets to play in Albany. So that's big. I think there's a lot of positives for Drake here. And I got 3. I think it will probably close 2. And if Omir doesn't play again, it probably closes a pick 'em. If Omir plays, it'll probably stay 2, 2.5. Maybe it gets back to 3. But yeah, Drake is live here. I think Drake is a good money line pick too, if you want to get a free one out of the gate early, or I guess late. This is the later games. But yeah, Drake all the way. Go Bulldogs.
All right, on we roll to an evening game on Friday where we have the Grand Canyon Gonzaga 3-14 battle in the West region. And I'll be honest, Jared, I'm interested in Gonzaga more now than maybe I have been in years past, on the basis that I almost feel like they're a little bit of a buy low on the, I know they won the WCC, but nobody's talking about Gonzaga this time of year. And usually it's, oh, who'd they play and what was the non-conference and who they going to choke to as number one seed. And now here they are as kind of a quiet 3 seed. Drew Timmy's still there. You know, a lot of the guys, you know, I know they don't have that high level NBA prospect anymore, but a lot of the guys that have been a part of their culture the last few years, you know, Julian Strother, it just feels like maybe they're starting to figure it out this time of year. I think there could be a statement to be made here, and Gonzaga could cover going away. Just your thoughts on kind of where Gonzaga's headed and Grand Canyon a little bit. What do you know about them?
I'm on Gonzaga. Yeah, I laid 15. Grand Canyon wants to run. That's not what you do against Gonzaga. Like, that's just like they are the junior varsity version of Gonzaga. West Coast Conference team, or not in the West Coast Conference, but a Western team that is kind of taking the mold of what Gonzaga did, which is they don't run in a sense with their tempo, but they shoot a bunch of threes. Over 40% of their shots come from three. So when I say run, I mean, they like to get out in transition and shoot threes. They're not a high tempo team, which might be their savior here. Because you can't be a high tempo team against Gonzaga. It just doesn't work. So we'll see what Bryce Drew has. He's going to be one of the hotter coaching names, I think, in the offseason. But we'll see what kind of scheme Bryce Drew cooks up. But again, Gonzaga just is out to prove something this year, because I agree. I do think they're a little undervalued. I do think that game in the West Coast final is the example of that. They wanted to show you that they were the best team in that conference, and they wanted to do it with margin. And when they are motivated like that, they still have a ton of talent. Strawweather's a star. Drew Timmy's not sexy, but he gets it done. And good luck, again, matching up with their long 6'7" wing guys that can shoot three. So it's just a really tough matchup. I think the total's been steamed up to the point where I wouldn't bet the over, but I'd be shocked if we didn't see Gonzaga get to 80 or 85 or maybe even 90 in this game. And I do think when you look at teams and coaches that are a little undervalued at this time of year, usually it's not Gonzaga, but this year it is. And I agree. I think that's why they make him an attractive player.
Good to know that we echo some of the same sentiments there. Interesting 8-9 game between the Memphis Tigers and the Florida Atlantic Owls, as Florida Atlantic will be moving into the American Athletic Conference next season. So we'll be seeing these two teams square off quite a bit in coming years. But for Friday night, it's a 2-point line in favor of Memphis. We all know Memphis, uber athletic, and it looks like, you know, it's all starting to come together for the Tigers. When you look at how they put it together, a very strong performance in the American Conference Championship game to beat Houston. Kendrick Davis, a do-it-all guard for them in the backcourt. But 31-3 kind of speaks for itself for Florida Atlantic. Interesting game here. Memphis, short chalk. What do you think?
Man, I'm so mad these teams are playing each other. I did my two-way here.
Is the winner live against Purdue, by the way?
100%. The winner wins. Yeah. The winner beats Purdue. I bet Memphis early on the money line. I thought the line would move in their direction because of how well they played in the American final. I was kind of right. It moved like a half a point. So then I came back on FAU plus 2.5. And I hope the game lands too. But I could just – this is such a great game. This is I knew I was going to probably buy back this game. I was hoping for three. Maybe it goes to three, but I already made my claim here. I took 2.5 because I started to hear some people that I trust really like FAU. And I was like, man, if they start diving into the market on the Owls, this thing's going to go back to two. And I'm going to miss my chance to get a hook here. But FAU spreads it out. They shoot. They're so well coached, and they play in a conference that, I think is a little better than people think. You know, UAB is a really good team, and they just wiped the floor with them. Like, it wasn't even close. So I know overall Conference USA's numbers aren't great, but I do think there's some teams in that conference that have the ability to stretch you. North Texas being one, La Tech being another, and man, they just made mincemeat of those teams this year. And I was really impressed with that final. I mean, that game was never even close. So it's tough to defend Florida Atlantic because they shoot it so well from all parts of the floor. They're equally balanced from three and 2-point. They do shoot a lot of threes. But again, the percentage is high enough to where it warrants it. They're not an overly fast team. They defend. Like, they have no holes. It's a really tough team to scheme against. And where Memphis, I think, is a little more volatile. Where Memphis can win this game by 20 easily, but they can lose it by 20. So which Memphis do we get that shows up? If the elite Memphis shows up, not only are they capable of winning this game by 20, but they're capable of running Purdue off the floor in the next game too. And we saw what they almost did to Gonzaga last year. Or no, what was it? It was the Gonzaga.
Oh, they were up 10 at halftime against Gonzaga.
Yeah, so I think that's the ceiling, frankly, for Memphis. But I don't know if they're going to be as locked in as they were in that game against Houston, which was a revenge game where they had gotten beaten at the buzzer at home a week prior.
Right. This feels like a game where you might get lazy, Memphis.
I'll be honest. So I picked FAU in my bracket. I put FAU in the Sweet 16 in my bracket. I also worked at FAU, though. It was one of my first jobs out of college. I was their women's basketball and baseball radio broadcaster and SID. Okay. So I have a soft spot for the Owls. I grew up in South Florida. My mom lives in Boca. I've been around that campus and that facility a lot. I was there the day they broke ground on their football stadium. I interviewed Howard Schnellenberger. Like, it's just, I have a weird connection to FAU. So I might not be objective when I'm telling you that I think they are capable of making a run to the Sweet 16. It's more what I want to see. But I do think this is my favorite matchup of the entire round of 64. Because I honestly could see the game playing out a million different ways. But I hope FAU wins because I think it'd be really good for that program and for Boca.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I'd like to see FAU's momentum continue in light of FAU entering the American Conference. Few more games to get to as we wrap things up. How about Kansas State? Jerome Tang, one of the better coaching jobs this season. But, you know, as I always caution this time of year, some of these teams, particularly Kansas State, one that did make a little bit of a run in the NCAA tournament. You'd have to go back 4 years, 5 years, though, in 2018, got to an Elite Eight. They got back to the tournament the following year and lost. They haven't been back since. So, you know, a little bit of uncharted waters for Kansas State here. Giving up 8 against Montana State, what do you think?
I think Kansas State wins and covers. Montana State scares me a little bit. Big Sky's not done well in this round, 5-11-1 against the spread. Remember last year's game? We all loved Montana State last year against Texas Tech. And
yeah, that's, got Tech annihilated.
I mean, that was, I think, the biggest blowout of the entire first round. And Texas Tech's not a good offensive team, and they dropped almost 100 in that game. So that's what scares me. Now, again, it's the same team as last year. Did they learn something? Did they improve? Sure, probably. They get to the line a lot. Kansas State fouls a lot. That's the one edge I found for Montana State here. And Kansas State is a little bit of a volatile team. They're a senior-laden team, which is unique, but they turn over a ton. They're sloppy with the ball, and they foul a lot. But they're very talented. They played in a conference that I think was the best conference in America by far. And I think at their best, they blow Montana State off the floor, similarly to what Texas Tech did. But very volatile team. So long story short, no bet for me.
All right, let's wrap things up with two games quick. Well, I guess we'll really just do the one because the other one includes TCU. We'll touch a little bit on TCU, but we don't know who the Horned Frogs are going to be playing as they await, I believe, the winner of Nevada and Arizona State. But regardless, it is Kent State and Indiana. Interesting line here. 4-13 game, Kent State only catching 4. And as a college basketball purist, I'd love to see Indiana make a deep run. It's one of those things where like the sport is better when that program is good and a blue blood like we all kind of expect them to be, or like the standard is there. Mike Woodson, at various times this season, it looks like that is their guy. They've swept Purdue in the regular season series. Trace Jackson Davis, I love, a lifer there in Bloomington. Jalen Hood, Schifino can really score. But I don't know, this line's weirding me out at just 4, and Sincere Carey, the guard at Kent State, can beat you in a lot of different ways. So this could be a sneaky good game. What do you think here?
It's funny that we did this game last. This is probably my favorite bet of the entire tournament so far in the early round. Kent State's winning this game. The MAC has been unbelievable in the tournament lately. 12-5 against the spread since 05, 6 straight covers. And remember the game last year between Akron and UCLA? Like, they just, I don't know what it is, the style. Different teams. Kent State covered against UCLA a few
Akron
years
gave
ago.
Them a game, yeah.
So it just there's something about this conference, first of all. And now don't let that be the only reason why you make a bet on a team. But this conference specifically has been really good in the round of 64. The second level to this year's Kent State team is one of the best cover teams in the country, over 63%, 19-11-1. So not only is the conference really good at covering the spread, very undervalued conference, this specific Kent State team has also been undervalued in the market all season long. And then you mentioned the guy, Sincere Carey. I think outside of TJD, you know, Trace Jackson Davis, I think he's the best player on the floor, definitely the best guard on the floor. Indiana's tough. They're big, they're long, their point guard, Hood Schifino, 6'7", but he's a true freshman.
Yep.
Didn't play great in the Big Ten tourney. And Malik Jacobs, the MAC Defensive Player of the Year, is going to be guarding him in this game. So we'll see. I mean, listen, this Kent State team's legit. They lost by 5 at Houston and by 7 at Gonzaga. Those are probably two of the best teams in the country, and they lost within 3 possessions on the road to those teams this season. So this is a battle-tested Kent State team. And
absolutely,
they're good at defending the rim. They're good at defending post-ups. I think they'll be able – you know, Indiana's going to get theirs at the rim. Race Thompson and TJD are behemoths. And again, Hood Schifino is a longer point guard, but the true freshman nature of him being the point guard scares me a little bit, and how he played in the Big Ten tournament definitely should scare people a little bit. And if Kent State makes some shots, they win this game. I think they can win it by margin too. If Indiana's a little bit on the struggle side early, like we saw against Penn State. But I think this is my favorite. This is one of the only two unit bets I made, Kent State plus 4.5.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think, as I said, for as much as I want to see Indiana come back, I like the spot for Kent State. I'll probably take the 4 and, you know, feel good about Kent State either winning the game outright, or if they do lose, I think they can cover this number and keep it to a 1-score margin. So that's going to just about do it for us. Just real quick, any thoughts on TCU, you know, and who they get, and, you know, if there could be a run here from the Horned Frogs? It was a team that, you know, gosh, in January went to Fog Allen Fieldhouse and clobbered Kansas. You know, any thoughts on them as we get out of Dodge?
So I like TCU a lot. I think the matchup against Gonzaga in that next round is going to be tough. I'll give you my final four. I've got Houston, Bama, UCLA, and Marquette, and I've got Houston beating Bama in the championship. My future. So the bracket, you know, good luck winning it. I always try to align my bracket with where my futures portfolio is. The big futures that I made, I got Houston last May at 22-1. I've been riding them, that bet, almost for a full calendar year, basically. So I'm not going away from that take now. I don't care about the injuries. I still think they're great. Sasser will be fine. I've got Houston in the Final Four in Houston, and I've got them winning it all. UCLA is the other future that I made recently at 13-1. I'll stick with that because I think in Vegas they'll win that region if they can get back by that game against Gonzaga. TCU is actually the other future I have at 35-1, sadly, but, you know, their best case scenario, they play UCLA in that Sweet 16 game. And I don't think they can get past that game. And then the other future I have is Baylor, who I am completely giving up on them. They have no chance to make it past, I think, maybe the round of 32. If they make it to the Sweet 16, that'll be a damn miracle. So I think overall TCU is a high upside team, but the matchup doesn't favor them against Gonzaga. If they make it to the Sweet 16, I do think that's where it'll end against UCLA. And I think Houston and Bama right now, I think, are the two best teams based off of what I've watched all year. If you ask me who the best team is start to finish of the full season, Houston. If you ask me who the best team is over the last month, I'd say Bama. For some reason, Brandon Miller seems to be playing better since this incident, and that's really scary. But some guys just rise to the occasion. And he's one of those guys that obviously has the ability to block out a lot of the distractions. And it's clearly galvanized Alabama because they've looked unbelievable over the last couple of weeks. And I think they are the best, most talented team in the country, top to bottom. Miller gives me like Carmelo Anthony vibes from 03. Like he just can take over a game from any angle. And I think Houston, top to bottom, is the best team. And we've seen it from start to finish of the season. So those are my two teams. I like that they're on opposite sides of the bracket. I think that'll be the final if it all plays out. But obviously the madness can ensue at any moment.
Well, there he is, Jared Smith, kind enough to join us, Fox Sports Radio, VSiN, doing a lot of different things in the gambling space. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun just running through the first, 32 games of the NCAA tournament. Follow him at Jared Lee Smith on Twitter. Follow our podcast at @full_slate_pod. Shoot me a follow at @G_Frank6, @UndercoverGreg as well for my gambling picks. Jared, thanks a lot for the time. This was fun. I'm sure we'll catch up again.
Absolutely, guys. I appreciate the venting session here. Let the madness begin.
All right. He's Jared Smith. I'm Greg Frank. Thanks to our jack of all trades, Alex Uplinger, for setting this up as well. This has been Full Slate, a Blue Wire gambling podcast. Happy March Madness to all. And of course, please play responsibly.